Welcome back to World Crisis Radio, our second hour brought to you by freedomcalendar.com. That's Dan Pilla's operation. You can order calendars for your holiday gift-giving needs all through the 12 days of Christmas, Epiphany, and beyond. That's freedomcalendar.com, 651-771-5234, 651-771-5234. Our sponsor, freedomcalendar.com. Now, we're talking to John Robb. He's just finished giving us a very, very somber and grim prognosis about Afghanistan. It's going to get worse and worse during 2007. Any further comment on this winter offensive notion?
Oh, you're probably not going to see that much during the winter. It's just impossible to move in Afghanistan during the winter. You know, what would probably happen is if there is an offensive, it's going to be, you know, located in the cities, and they'll start using IED packs and car bombs and the like, adopting many of the tactics we see in Iraq. The only good part about Afghanistan is that you can't use systems disruption against Afghanistan because most of the people don't have access to basic infrastructure.
So there are fewer systems to disrupt. Now, how about the other one? Looking forward into 2007, what's ahead in Iraq in your view?
More of the same until something breaks on Iran. You know, my worry is that we end up, you know, with a bleeding, you know, guerrilla environment from Lebanon all the way, you know, on the Mediterranean all the way through to the Hindu Kush. Things could, you know, just turn into, you know, one chaotic mess. The chaos that we see in Iraq is already starting to spread, and that, you know, we're really playing, you know, a rearguard action now, or, you know, not trying to, you know, contain it just to Iraq, or, I mean, you know, pacify Iraq, but we're also trying to stop it from moving into Saudi Arabia and going after our core oil supplies. You know, the big fear is that, you know, it becomes so chaotic in the region that, you know, the oil that was disrupted in Iraq successfully ends up being disrupted in Saudi Arabia, and then we're all paying $130 a barrel. It's going to get worse. You know, I don't see anything. Excuse me?
I'm sorry, wouldn't you say that the lesson of this simply is that if you have a foreign army of occupation, be it in the Palestinian territories, be it in Iraq or in Afghanistan or wherever it is, and whoever they are, quite apart from any consideration of religion or politics or anything else, that foreign occupation creates a resistance, and then through the various military intelligence techniques used to fight a resistance, this will destroy the society. I mean, wouldn't you agree also that the defeat of the Israelis by Hezbollah this past summer is essentially the death knell of the old style, you know, post 1945 imperialism in this entire part of the world? We'll be back in just a second on World Crisis Radio, rbnlive.com.
Thank you.
Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. This is Webster Topley in Washington, D.C. We're talking to military analyst and strategic theoretician John Robb, who does the Global Guerrillas web blog and is the author of Brave New War. John, we're down to our last couple of questions. Wouldn't you agree, then, that the prospects of a foreign army of occupation in the modern Middle East were basically zero when this war started, and now that Hezbollah has been able to defeat the Israelis in such a spectacular way, that it's just it's an enterprise that nobody should continue?
Well, I agree, and I think it's even worse than that. You know, Martin van Creveld, another thinker that's from Israel, and Bill Lind and I all think this is part of the general and inexorable delegitimization of the nation state in a globalized environment. The nation state is, you know, losing power, losing its ability to defend itself, and that what we did in the Middle East is really just accelerate that. And the first nation states that, you know, kind of come under pressure and fall will be those rickety states in the Middle East, and that it will spread and it will get worse as it goes to new environments. We're already seeing, you know, elements of fourth generation warfare and fifth generation warfare in Mexico, and could end up on our doorstep in a relatively short fashion.
And again, since you've mentioned van Creveld, his writings about logistics, of course, very important in this connection. I believe van Creveld says that the logistical high point of the modern state was 1975, and I would say, don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. In other words, the modern state is not so much at fault here as the dominance of neo-feudal elements, economic globalization, finance oligarchs, the people who have taken the U.S. logistical capability as it existed under the New Deal state and essentially wrecked it and ruined it. This is the problem. And, of course, when a foreign army goes into Iraq, as we've seen with the imperial life in the Emerald City, they come in with this baggage of neocon, deregulated, privatized economic notions that are absolutely counterproductive. It's very interesting to me that in the last throes of this whole thing, they're coming up now with things that sound like the New Deal, like create a program to put everybody back to work, except, of course, it's too late now to put everybody back to work. If the New Deal had been applied in 2003, the whole thing could have looked much better, although I don't think anything could have saved it. Last question would be, and again, it gets back to, isn't this situation evident? I'm wondering the following. If we look at the blowing up of the Maine in Havana Harbor back in 1898, 300 dead sailors, approximately. If we look at Pearl Harbor, there's a growing debate about what this was. Some people would blame Roosevelt. I think that's the weakest of all the approaches. Certainly the British wanted the U.S. in World War II, and some Navy admirals, Richmond K. Turner and a few others, might have been interested in going along with that. Anyway, 3,000 dead there, and these are both gambits. And let's imagine now we're looking at Iraq, and let's say we're going up an order of magnitude each time from the 300 of the Maine to the 3,000 at Pearl Harbor to maybe 30,000 in some catastrophe waiting for us, maybe some point during 2007. Could it not be that Cheney and Cheney's faction know very well that the 150,000 U.S. forces are in a critical, untenable, and extremely vulnerable position, and they're willing to say, well, fine, we're willing to lose them. That way we get the pretext for the nuclear attack on Iran, which we might not be able to get any other way.
Well, I'd probably default to, you know, Occam's razor. The simplest solution is that they're just incompetent rather than conspiratorial. I mean, granted, they are definitely aiming at Iran, and they're going to end up attacking it, you know, and it's just a question of timing. You know, Bush is not going to leave in a year and a half or 2 years, I guess, without taking out Iran's nuclear capacity. It's just not going to happen.
But again, even here, we have a CIA report that says there's no evidence of any program, and we've had people here from France and other countries saying this is simply a repeat performance of the Iraqi weapons of mass destruction. There is no proof. There's very likely no Iranian nuclear weapons program at all.
Well, the truth of the situation really doesn't matter. It's perception at the leadership level. And if they believe it is, then they're, you know, and they're willing to, you know, do anything to get rid of it, then they're going to do it. We're all along for the ride. things are going to get, pretty dicey.
I think we can agree that Bush and Cheney are committed to something in this direction if they can do it. Maybe the last question, I want to give you a chance to talk about your website for a second and your book and personal appearances and so forth, but what should people do? I mean, given all this, what should the individual do?
I've been thinking a lot about that, and there's really not much. You should at least, get some kind of, backup to your current, energy needs, solar and pellet stoves and other things, because the disruption that's going to come in, that's going to be directed against, the oil system is going to be pretty severe over the next couple of years. In terms of politics, I don't see much difference between the Democrats and the Republicans at this point. Some people do, but I just don't see that difference. In approach that's going to make much of a difference in our daily lives.
Well, again, the commitment we have on this broadcast is very strongly 9/11 truth as a way of getting some clarity into this picture and also getting an idea about what to do. But for now, why don't you just say a few words about your blog, say a few words about your book, where people can buy it, and do you have personal appearances, lectures coming up that people can attend?
I don't have any personal appearances in the next couple months, except for, going down to CENTCOM, just an occasional kind of private gathering. The weblog is, of course, Global Gorillas. You can either get to that through Google or Googling my name, J-O-H-N, R-O-B-B, John Robb. And the book, Brave New War, is on Amazon, and it's available for pre-order. It's going to be out in a month or two. And the book's kind of a downer because it shows, a series of trends and this kind of, ground up, bottoms up kind of insurgency that's going to cause us a lot of problems over the next decade or two. It's just going to get worse.
But again, just in the narrow framework of Iraq, if you hadn't had Bremer and those neocons with their lunatic Milton Friedman privatization, deregulation, disband everything, sell everything off, fire everybody, wouldn't that have made a decisive difference, even within this general framework of the non-viability of imperialism as a whole?
I just don't think it would have made much of a difference in Iraq. Most of us are thinking about, how warfare has evolved, that almost any technique going into Iraq would have ended up in failure. The classic thing is when you fight the weak, you become weak yourself. And it would have worn us down. It would have continued to spiral, spiraled up to the level of chaos we see today, regardless of whether or not we adopted a New Deal program, even though that's smarter, vastly smarter to the kind of free enterprise, 21st century U.S. approach that we tried. The historical forces are pretty straightforward here. Nation states are declining in power, and they're going to have more and more difficulty defeating, if they can defeat them at all, these non-state forces.
Well, okay, we want to thank John Robb. Again, he conducts the Global Gorillas website, very important place to get news and analysis about military affairs. His book is Brave New War, available on Amazon.com. And we hope to keep in touch with you. Maybe we can continue this debate. I think you're too pessimistic about the prospects of the nation state. The main thing is to cut the feudal element, because that's how the whole thing started, right? Back in the 1400s, it was a matter of getting rid of the feudal elements or somehow bridling them. And now we've got the feudal element making this massive return to power in the form of financiers, bankers, private central banks, globalization, globaloney, and all the rest of it. But thank you, John Robb, and thank you for coming on our program, and we'll see you in the future.
Okay, thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Now, in that case, the end of our segment, and we'll be back in a minute here on World Crisis Radio, Republic Broadcasting Network, brought to you by FreedomCalendar.com. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. I'm your host, Webster Tarpley, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. We are brought to you, as always, by our sponsors, the fine folks at FreedomCalendar.com. Time to order Freedom Calendars for your Christmas and post-Christmas gift-giving needs. And that's FreedomCalendar.com, 651-771-5234, 651-771-5234, brought to you by Dan Pilla, P-I-L-L-A, the founder of FreedomCalendar.com. Well, you've just heard it. The U.S. military situation in Iraq is hopeless. The U.S. military situation and the NATO and British military situation in Afghanistan is hopeless. The Israelis have been defeated by Hezbollah. Everybody in the Middle East is now rushing to imitate the tactics used by Hezbollah, in particular, as we just heard in some detail, that defensive hedgehog position, that amorphous amoeba-like fortification 20 or 30 miles in depth in different directions that can resist attack from any direction. And if you plaster a few of those across the 400 miles, making 800 miles or 1,300 kilometers U.S. supply lines between Kuwait and Baghdad, then the situation of the U.S. forces in central and northern Iraq becomes absolutely untenable, critical, and a rout of some kind begins as the fuel and ammunition supplies begin to dwindle. Now, in the middle of all this, a couple of things are clear. Bush will escalate Iraq. That's clear now. We'll get to this in some detail in a minute. And when he does it, and this is what we've got to focus on, Bush will cite 9/11, 9/11, 9/11. Instead of having 50% of what comes out of Bush's mouth be tied up with 9/11 and the lessons of 9/11 and how the others have a pre-9/11 mentality, but he's got a post-9/11 mentality, we will hear Bush, especially as he goes towards the inevitable constitutional crisis and possible impeachment, he'll be talking 9/11, 90, 95, 99% of the time, because he will have no other argument. And indeed, why not get out of Iraq? The only thing he can cite is that some horrible retribution in terms of 9/11. Now, in this context, we have to congratulate the 9/11 Truth Movement for the powerful signs of vitality and new initiative and gearing up for the next round of struggle that we had last Saturday with these magnificent tea parties. People saw them. We had them in Boston. We had them in San Francisco, Milwaukee, St. Louis, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., shredding party. 9/11 Blogger has done a wonderful job in coverage of these things. You can see all sorts of photographs. You can see all kinds of speeches up there. Go to 9/11 blogger and catch up on the details of the Tea Party events. So this is now the perspective. Bush will escalate. There will be a constitutional crisis. His main weapon will be 9/11 demagogy of terror. The Democrats are worse than useless, worse than pathetic, feckless, clueless, gutless when it comes to fighting back on 9/11 issues. Mrs. Pelosi worships at the altar of 9/11, Al-Qaeda, Bin Laden, the cave, the laptop. The same thing goes for the senators of the Democratic Party. They are feckless, absolutely useless in doing any fighting on this. So the whole thing will fall to 9/11 truth. Let me ask people, if you are in New Hampshire, not just if you're in New Hampshire, but if you're in Massachusetts, if you're in Vermont, if you're in upstate New York within striking distance, Maine, or even southern Canada, it's time to get in touch with me, if nobody else, and let's talk about truth squads. Let's talk about going into New Hampshire with truth squads to confront these demagogic oligarchical candidates, the Democrats in particular, who really want to stay the course and have a wider war. How about people in Iowa, not just Iowa, but Illinois, and that reaches really over to Chicago, in Wisconsin, in Minnesota, in Nebraska, in Kansas, in Missouri, all kinds of places where people can have impact on the retail politics that go on in Iowa in advance of the Iowa caucuses, which probably in January, but maybe even in December, these things might be taking place next year. We've got to go in there and confront not just the well-known ones like Rudy Giuliani, who destroyed the crime scene and violated all those federal laws, the warmonger Hillary Clinton, the madman John McCain, rogue state rollback McCain of the Hanoi Hilton, apparently suffered permanent damage during this experience. How about Barack Obama, slippery as an eel, utterly unprincipled, a warmonger, saying that the U.S. forces are part of any solution in Iraq. Obama wants to stay in Iraq. Obama supported the Israeli attack on Lebanon. Obama talks about the possible need to attack Iran. Obama did everything he could to support Joe Lieberman in Connecticut. He opposed Mrs. Sigelis in Illinois. Is Obama an operation of the Republicans or of Hillary Clinton? Anyway, he's got to be confronted on these important issues. Back in a minute on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. This is Webster Tarpley speaking from Washington, D.C. We are going to go through our intelligence briefing now in the last half hour, put the world together for you in this next to the last program of 2007, brought to you by FreedomCalendar.com, FreedomCalendar.com for all your Christmas gift needs. So Bush will escalate. He will be yelling 9/11 like we've never seen before. The Democrats are hopeless and helpless. It's going to be up to 9/11 truth to counterattack Bush on the 9/11 demagogy of terror that he's going to be using to motivate the Third World War. And, of course, in this, 9/11 truth is the brain of the peace movement, putting together the things that some other peace advocates, anti-war forces, don't seem to be able to understand, try as they will. So that is our role, and we'll be doing 9/11 truth squads in New Hampshire, in Iowa, and here in Washington, D.C., and indeed wherever oligarchical pro-war candidates congregate, and that's the majority of places. So look for somebody coming to your town. Remember, what you want to do is get ready to ask some embarrassing questions about 9/11 in its relation to the various imperialist wars, and get that on videotape. Get that in form so that it can be posted online, YouTube and the rest of it, the various blogs, and we will begin to get something going. Now, last week, Bush went through this tiresome series of fake consultations and so forth to ask various people what they wanted. Just in the last couple of days, we had a headline in the Washington Post that Bush was bucking his own hand-picked group. The Joint Chiefs of Staff, all of them said, we don't want any more troops. No more GIs should be sent to Iraq. There is no mission for them to do. Well, as a result, General Abizaid is now out. He has been sent to Limoges, as it used to be in the French army. He has been ushered out, basically fired in the same way that Shinseki was fired, and they can hide it behind the fiction of his retirement. It looks like Casey and Odierno, in the Keitel tradition, are willing to go along with what Bush is demanding. Bush obviously wants to escalate the war for all kinds of reasons, not least that Cheney is telling him that's what he has to do. Now, given this, Bush has 12% support of the U.S. population for escalating the war. 88% of the U.S. population are against him on this one. And the ruling class is against him because they don't want this to be done by the U.S. The ruling class, speaking through the Baker-Hamilton group, has said that they want local cannon fodder to be brought in. They want Syria and Egypt and Jordan and Saudi Arabia and others on the scene. The Iraqi Sunnis, let them do the fighting against Iran. So where this is all leading. We've got even people like Scarborough, Pat Buchanan, all kinds of people are beginning to talk about constitutional crisis and impeachment. And you heard that, all of that, first here in the last several months. And this has nothing yet in terms of what the Bushmen are going to do when the Congress demands that administration witnesses show up and produce documents. We will see stonewalls. We will see constitutional crisis, contempt of Congress, and the beginnings of impeachment. And all the time, Bush will be yelping 9/11, 9/11. We now have the Pentagon Papers case of this new round. This is now Flint Leverett, as we reported last time. He wanted to put a relatively anodyne op-ed into the New York Times. Let's not let Flint and his wife posture too much on this one. But the White House, and especially Elliot Abrams and Megan O'Sullivan, two neocon fascist lunatics in the White House, reached out and stopped the New York Times from publishing it. And, of course, our heroes at the New York Times, instead of publishing it as they did with the Pentagon Papers back in 1971, they have essentially capitulated and caved in, publishing the whole thing with all the redactions, lots of big black spaces on the editorial page of the New York Times. So there's a case now. This is illegal. You're not allowed to suppress somebody's op-ed in the New York Times. This is now the model for the 9/11, for the Iraqi version of the Pentagon Papers. What Bush is following is apparently a lunatic plan done by that greatest strategic genius of all time, Frederick Kagan, a chicken hawk who has never smelled gunpowder, of the American Enterprise Institute, and his crazy brother Robert Kagan, both the sons, I believe, of a thoroughly boring Yale University professor of classics who attempts to distort the historical record on this stuff. The problem for Frederick Kagan is, if you think there are more forces that should be sent to Iraq, where do they come from? Kagan's argument is at this level. The U.S. military establishment has 1.4 million. There are only 140,000 in Iraq. Therefore, it's clear that there must be 50 or 60,000. He doesn't realize that some of those are not combat troops. Let's look now at the provocations vis-a-vis Iran. Just this afternoon, the UN Security Council voted for sanctions against Iran. This is a unanimous vote, 15-0. Everybody's in favor of it. Russia and China voted for it. The Russians, however, in advance had watered down this resolution considerably and delayed it quite a bit. Naturally, nobody should be surprised if the Russians do not interpose themselves between the U.S. and its next victim, the Iranians. The whole Russian strategy is that as the U.S. attacks more and more countries, with the Russians always saying, no, don't do it, but if the U.S. really insists on attacking all these countries, by the time the U.S. gets around to the attack on Russia, the U.S. will be fatally weakened, and that has been working so far. That's the Putin strategy. This is one of the reasons the neocons hate Putin with such a foaming passion. Nevertheless, these sanctions are real, but they are watered down. The neocons will crow in public and complain in private. Now, we've had Tony Blair on his Middle East tour, including Turkey, Egypt, Iraq, Israel, Palestine, and the United Arab Emirates, and he is on a big organizing tour for the Sunni or Arab Alliance against Iran. Tony's speech in the United Arab Emirates was that the Iranians want to pin the Anglo-Saxon forces back in Lebanon, Iraq, and Palestine. But he says the Anglo-Saxons are going to pin back the Iranians across the whole Middle East by building alliances. And that's that Sunni or Arab block of dupes, if they can manage it, to dupe Syria, dupe Jordan, dupe Saudi Arabia, and dupe Egypt. One thing is the exit of Prince Turki Al-Faisal as the U.S. ambassador of the Saudis a couple of weeks ago. Seems to have to do with this. Prince Bandar, the previous ambassador, who's now the head of the National Security Council of Saudi Arabia, is much more inclined to going along with Cheney. And Turki Al-Faisal, like his brother Saud Al-Faisal, much more interested in negotiating with Iran. Turkey is out. It looks like the puppet forces, the kamikaze forces, if you will, in Saudi Arabia are gaining the upper hand. Well, if they really insist on doing this, it will, of course, mean the extinction of this dubious Saudi monarchy created by the British and Lawrence Arabia of Arabia in that famous film. The Iranians are fighting back. In the past week, the Iranians have said, look, UN Security Council, if you want to condemn anybody, you should condemn the Israelis for their possession of so many nuclear weapons. At the same meetings this week in the think tanks, actually 8 days ago, where Flint Leverett made his speech, we also had Joseph Cirincione and Colonel Sam Gardner, both of them part of the group that has detailed itself to try to warn about the Cheneyak's coming attack on Iran. Cirincione says he estimates that before the November election, there was a 60% chance of a U.S. attack on Iran. Cirincione thinks that that chance is now down to 25%, but let's watch out. He may be too optimistic. Sam Gardner points out that in the second week of October, the Bush administration put out orders to their entire faction saying, in effect, shut up about Iran because we don't want to have people yapping about a coming attack on Iran. It's going to scare the voters, and it's also going to drive up the price of oil, whereas the whole demagogic ploy was to lower the price of oil in time for the election and try to get some Republicans elected that way. It's also very important to see CBS and Reuters have reported this week the U.S. Navy is now considering a new buildup of naval power in the Arabian Sea and the Gulf, and it would be an additional aircraft carrier battle group being sent. Our calculus is that the U.S. forces there reached its height, their height at about the end of October, with four carrier battle groups or the equivalent. The Enterprise has since left. We believe also that an amphibious support ship has left, assault ship has left, that the Eisenhower is there at the present time, has reached the Gulf finally. that would probably mean three battle groups on the scene. And if you send another one, that would bring it up to four, as best I can see, and that would be the level that you had in late October when we had our last war alert. Now, we're also told that during this past summer, there was an active conspiracy of Elliot Abrams, the convicted felon who runs, Iran-Contra felon, who runs the Middle East Department of the National Security Council in the White House, along with Mehrav Wormser and David Wormser, Mehrav of the Hudson Institute, David of the Chaniak group in Cheney's office. The goal here was to try to encourage Israel to attack Syria as part of the war with Lebanon this past summer. It didn't happen. This is Mehrav Wormser in the great tradition of Herman Kahn, the strangelove who wanted to talk about thermonuclear war and wage it as soon as he could. We've just had an interview of President Assad of Syria to La Repubblica of Rome, saying all Syria really wants to do is enter into normalized relations with Israel and negotiate with them. More broadly, the Bush administration is attempting to stoke four crises in the world: Iraq, Iran, Sudan, and North Korea, the DPRK. On the DPRK, the six-party talks have ended with no result. Neocons not happy. The North Koreans were complaining again that the September 05 deal, perfectly reasonable solution to the entire thing, had been actively sabotaged by U.S. provocations in the form of a shutdown of the main North Korean foreign trade bank in Macau in China, and that this had cost the North Koreans $25 million. Concerning the Sudan, I want to commend the work of the Black Commentator, a blog that you can find online. The Black Commentator, at least on this issue, doing yeoman service. You've seen all these television ads about an alleged crisis in Sudan. Well, remember again, this is the U.S., the British, and the Israelis have been attempting to destabilize Sudan for decades. This is essentially a neocon proposal to attack yet another leading Arab state, the Sudan, of course, a member of the Arab League. It's the neocons and the Likudniks who are stoking the fires of military intervention. Why aren't they calling for humanitarian aid? Why aren't they calling for a lifting of the genocidal sanctions that are already in place and that are doing so much damage and killing people? Why don't they call for a comprehensive debt moratorium for Sudan instead of constantly playing the card of destabilization and internecine warfare? Well, it has to do with oil, of course, the fact that Sudan has oil and that Chad on the other side of the Darfur frontier area of Sudan also has oil. This is simply a U.S., British, Israeli oil grab attempting not even so much to get the oil for themselves, although that's part of it, but mainly to make sure that the People's Republic of China does not get that oil. Now, speaking of economics, we've just had a big delegation of U.S. finance oligarchs going to China. We've had Paulson of Goldman Sachs, the Secretary of the Treasury. We've had helicopter Ben Bernanke of the Federal Reserve. Susan Schwab, the U.S. Trade Representative or Minister for Economic Warfare, would be more accurate to say. Elaine Chao, the Secretary of Labor or of Exploitation. And they have been attempting to strong-arm and threaten, intimidate, antagonize China on the question of the exchange rate. The Anglo-Americans want the Chinese to let their currency go up, to upvalue the yuan. And this is, they motivate this to some extent with the export competition. The Chinese exports are unrealistically cheap, but mainly they're afraid of the long-term financial implications. The Chinese now have $988 billion of U.S. Treasury securities, which of course means that if they decided to sell those off, the U.S. would be bankrupt within 24 hours. The Chinese growth rate, of course, whatever the Chinese are doing, it's having tremendous effects in terms of economic growth. The Chinese growth was 10.4% in the most recent quarter and 11.3% year-to-year in the quarter before that, Wu Yi, the deputy prime minister of China, warned Paulson, Bernanke, Chow, and Schwab that the U.S. misunderstands the reality of China. Now, if you translate that from inscrutable Chinese diplomatic language into gutter English, you'd get something unprintable. China will change at its own pace. Read, get off our back. The U.S. accuses China of backsliding, that the Chinese are giving an illegitimate subsidy to the yen by keeping it low. Schwab goes even further. Susan Schwab, trade representative, says the whole Asian model of state dirigism and stress on exports is no good. Well, compare the prosperity growing in China with the growing bankruptcy of the United States, and you'll see where the dirigism or free market cartel swindles are superior. The U.S. wants free markets, says Schwab. In reality, we have cartels. Domestic consumption to relieve pressure on the bankrupt dollar. Paulson says China is responsible for the fact that it has a surplus in trade with the United States. It has to do something about it. China should raise interest rates to strangle its own development. It should fight inflation, a typical theme for the moneyed power, and should avoid the overheating of the Chinese economy. That means economic growth in any form that might raise wages. We'll be back in a minute for our last segment here on World Crisis Radio, rbnlive.com. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio, our last segment on our pre-Christmas broadcast here. The debate between Paulson, Bernanke, and the rest of them, and the Chinese. Interesting to compare the countries that are in deficit today, that are running huge trade deficits, all follow the Anglo-American free market, in reality, cartelized financier model. The deficit countries, the deficit bloc, the U.S., the British, Australia, India, South Africa, all the Eastern European puppet states, Colombia, Mexico, where U.S. influence is greatest, their deficits are sure to follow. Countries that are running a surplus, Eurozone Europe, Russia, China, Indonesia, Argentina, Brazil, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Jordan, where U.S. economic influence is less. Notice also General Motors is about to lose its historic position as the number one world automaker in 2007. Toyota of Japan will take over. The Iranian representative at the United Nations, Ambassador Javad Zarif of Iran, in his speech pointed out that the Security Council decision was a document of bullying, pressure, and intimidation, and simply shows how far certain warmongers in the U.S. administration are prepared to go with their arbitrary, fluctuating, and self-serving interpretations of international law. He also cited a declaration by the members of the Non-Aligned Group, former Group of 77, and the Organization of the Islamic Conference, representing two-thirds of the nations of this world, saying that every nation has an inalienable right to peaceful nuclear energy. Everybody in the world has a right to nuclear power for peaceful purposes. So whether you're a U.S. left-winger, Malthusian, or right-winger, you're up against two-thirds of the world who agree that Iran has a right to peaceful nuclear energy, and nothing more has ever been proven against them. So that's the response from Iran in the Security Council. In the last moments, let me commend to everybody my book, 9/11 Synthetic Terror, Made in USA, available at Amazon.com. You can buy it in conjunction with George Bush, the unauthorized biography, the prehistory of the current crisis, with all kinds of references to Robert Gates and people like this. In the course of 2007, a full political MIHOP approach to 9/11 truth will be nothing short of indispensable. In the time of the election campaign, as we went into various kinds of United Front activity, there was a tendency for the backward LIHOP views and even unanswered questions to creep back in, even around the fifth anniversary of these events, through the handiwork of a number of individuals. Let me say again, the time for LIHOP is gone. The time for unanswered questions is long gone. Only a full political, invisible government, made it happen on purpose approach is going to work. Without this, you will not get through the titanic battles coming in 2007. So the easiest way to get a hold of it, my book, 9/11 Synthetic Terror, Made in USA, available at Amazon.com. We'll see you next week here on World Crisis Radio. And don't forget, freedomcalendar.com for all your Christmas needs.